Do you feel like you need God's encouragement and wisdom throughout the week to take hold of His promise to fly like an eagle? You've come to the right place. Welcome to Eagles on the Hill. Let's join our host, Pastor Jeff Shike.
Hey, people, I am your host, Pastor Jeff Shike. Thanks for joining us on this edition of the podcast. Today, we're going to be doing a little bit of touring in Israel for a couple of reasons. First of all, because we're going to be headed up north to a place that The Chosen Season 4, Episode 2 goes to. And so right now, The Chosen Season 4 is being released 2 episodes per week here during the month of June. And so I thought I would take a look at Season 4, Episode 2, where they head, which is Caesarea Philippi, far up north. It's in the Golan Heights, really right close to the border of Syria and close to the border of Lebanon as well. So in the upper right-hand corner of the modern nation of Israel. So we're going to head up there as The Chosen Season 4, Episode 2 did, and check out what we find there and maybe fill in some parts of the story that The Chosen doesn't get to, because it's kind of has its own story arc. In fact, I want to encourage you, if you're a person who likes The Chosen, who watches The Chosen, encourage you to check out www.christlincoln.org/The Chosen, one word, The Chosen. And our studies are there for all 4 seasons of The Chosen, and it will give you some more backstory, some more biblical backstory for what's going on with The Chosen, as well as give you some discussion questions, things to think about as you're watching The Chosen. So as we head up north to Caesarea Philippi, we want to travel along with Jesus and his disciples. And they made a stop in Mark chapter 8 that is very significant. And this stop just so happens to be missing from The Chosen. That's neither here nor there, I suppose, for our purposes. But because it's significant, I want to take a look at it from Mark chapter 8. Let's take a look. It says, they came to Bethsaida, and Bethsaida is on the northeastern shore of the Sea of Galilee, as you head into the Golan Heights. So they came into Bethsaida, and some people brought a blind man and begged Jesus to touch him. He took the blind man by the hand and led him outside the village. When he had spit on the man's eyes and put his hands on him, Jesus asked, "Do you see anything?" He looked up and said, "I see people. They look like trees walking around." Once more, Jesus put his hands on the man's eyes. Then his eyes were opened. His sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. Jesus sent him home, saying, "Don't even go into the village." Mark chapter 8, verses 22 to 26. So this is the only time this happens that I'm aware of, at least recorded in the Gospels, where Jesus does a miracle and doesn't succeed. And so the man sees sort of in a fog. He sees people, but they look like trees. And so then Jesus completes the miracle by doing it a second time, essentially, and then the man sees clearly. It's a very strange miracle. It's one of a kind like that. And so there must be some significance to it. Well, right after that miracle, Jesus heads north to Caesarea Philippi, and some important events in the lives of Jesus' disciples take place. So we're going to read through those events and then talk about what Caesarea Philippi was, why Jesus had this interaction with his disciples there at Caesarea Philippi, and the significance of that miracle in Mark chapter 8, that kind of halfway and then completed miracle of the giving of sight to that blind man. So let's read. This account happens in the Gospel of Mark. We're going to read it from the Gospel of Matthew as well, the account from Caesarea Philippi. When Jesus came to this is Mark 16, by the way, verses 13 to 23. When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say the Son of Man is?" They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." "But what about you?" Jesus asked, "Who do you say that I am?" And Simon Peter answered, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." Jesus replied, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by flesh and blood, but by my Father in heaven. And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. I will give you the keys to the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." Then he ordered his disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Messiah. From that time on, Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders, the chief priests, and teachers of the law, that he must be killed and on the third day be raised to life. Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. "Never, Lord," he said, "this shall never happen to you." Jesus turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns." All right. I want to take a look at and dive into that passage and point out a couple of things. But first, I want to talk about what Caesarea Philippi is, why this is taking place in Caesarea Philippi. So if you're watching this on YouTube, we'll put a picture on the screen of modern-day Caesarea Philippi. And if you're not watching on YouTube, basically what you see as you go to Caesarea Philippi today is this huge cave that obviously was a place of worship. And we'll show you in a moment on YouTube what that place of worship looked like, the temple that was built there by Herod the Great, then the city built around it by Herod Philip, Herod the Great's son, so dedicated, of course, to Caesar, so Caesarea Philippi, Herod Philip built the city around it. But this cave there, of course, has been there for hundreds and hundreds of years before Jesus, but at the time of Jesus, this cave was viewed as, inside the cave is a spring. And the water in this spring, there's a huge pool of water inside this cave. And modern day, we can tell how deep it is. But back then, you couldn't tell how deep it was. It just seemed to go on forever. It was so very deep. And so the belief was that that cave was the entrance to the gates of hell. And that the god Pan was worshipped there. The god Pan was the goat god. Was represented by a goat. And so Pan was worshipped there. And so the belief was that in the wintertime, Pan went down to hell. And then in the springtime, Pan came back up. And there was lots of goats that were there worshipped as representing the god Pan, from which we get the word pandemonium, by the way. And so in order to get the god Pan to be in a mindset to have the surrounding area be fertile, then the priests who were there would sacrifice goats, would sacrifice to the goats, would practice bestiality with the goats in an effort to try to get the goat god to be ready to procreate, to be ready to make the area fertile. So just some horrific things happening there at this place called the gates of hell and this temple there that Herod had built. So if you're watching on YouTube, here's a picture of an artist rendering of what that temple and what that area looked like back in Jesus' day. If you're looking online, you'll see, or on YouTube, you'll see the large cave to the left-hand side of that picture behind the temple. And so that's the gates of hell right there in that picture. Jesus apparently went to this place with his disciples. And it would have probably freaked his disciples out, I suppose, to go to such a place that was so horrible, that had such horrible worship practices. And yet, if you look through, especially the Gospel of Mark, which is a gospel written primarily to Gentiles, you'll notice that Jesus is not afraid to go into Gentile territories. In fact, he takes his disciples to Gentile territories quite often. Jesus in Mark 5 goes to the region of the Gadarenes and the tombs there to cast out demons. And if you remember the story, the demons wind up going into pigs and drowning in the Sea of Galilee and all of that. In Mark chapter 7, Jesus goes to Tyre and Sidon and speaks with this lady who has a demon-possessed daughter. Also in Mark chapter 7, Jesus goes to the Decapolis, the 12 cities of the Gentiles, and or 10 cities of the Gentiles. Actually, it's probably more like 16 cities by the time you count them all up, but the Decapolis. And there he heals a person who's deaf and mute, and he feeds 4,000. He goes to Caesarea Philippi, Mark chapter 8. So Jesus is often taking his disciples to places that are Gentile in nature. Why? Because eventually the disciples are going to wind up going to Gentile areas themselves. They're going to be sharing the good news of Jesus in Gentile areas. So that's why Jesus takes them there to begin to help them learn how to do that and not be afraid of going to these Gentile areas, even to the gates of hell. So let's take a look at then what happens here in Matthew chapter 16. We'll just kind of walk through it a little bit and point out some things that are of interest to us, particularly if you watch the Chosen episode, season 4, episode 2. These things will be of interest because the Chosen kind of deals with some of them well and misses others. First comment is, as the disciples go to the region of Caesarea Philippi in the Chosen, in season 4, episode 2, as they're walking up there, the scenery along that walk is perfect, just so you know, if you have a chance to watch it. And when they get to Caesarea Philippi, the appearance of that ungodly place is just perfect. It's based on that picture that I just showed you on YouTube, if you're watching on YouTube. So the Chosen does a wonderful job with the scenery on the way up to Caesarea Philippi, does a wonderful job with the way Caesarea Philippi is portrayed there. It just does a great job. A couple things that we want to highlight here, though, is Jesus asks, who do people say the Son of Man is? And Peter, speaking for the whole group, gets the answer right. You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. Notice that he's called Simon Peter before Jesus names him Peter. This whole naming of Peter thing, in fact, in the Gospel of John, he's called Peter in John, I believe it's chapter 1. So this this kind of naming, renaming of Simon as Peter, apparently happens a couple of different times throughout the ministry that Jesus has with his disciples, and it's not unique to this scene here at Caesarea Philippi. So the point is, Peter gets it right on behalf of the disciples. You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. Keep that in mind for a moment. We're going to talk about that more in a minute. Then Jesus says, you are Peter, and on this rock — the word Peter means rock — you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church. And there's a lot of confusion around that verse, Matthew 16, verse 18. You are Peter. That is a masculine noun. So obviously this is a guy. He's Peter. He's a guy. You are Peter. And on this feminine rock — it's a feminine noun, the word rock — on this rock I will build my church is feminine. And so when he says, I call you Peter, or the rock, and on this rock — so there's two words, rock, there — the second word, rock, on this rock I will build my church, cannot be Peter because it's feminine. If it were Peter himself that Jesus was going to build the church on, it would have been masculine. It's not masculine, it's feminine. So Jesus, when he says, on this rock I will build my church, is referring to some feminine noun, which he's calling rock. The best guess over the years has been the word faith. The word faith in Greek is a feminine noun. And Peter has just given this great confession of faith. And so what Jesus is saying here in verse 18 is, I tell you, you are the rock, Peter, and on your faith that you've just confessed, I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. Why is Jesus referring to the gates of Hades? Well, because he's there at Caesarea Philippi, where people believed was the gates of Hades. Even this horrible place, this place of terrible worship of false gods, bestiality, and all the rest — even this will not overcome my church. My church, in fact, will triumph over this, these beliefs. And that's the promise of God, the promise of Jesus here in this passage. Now, notice what happens then after this. Jesus orders his disciples to not tell anyone he was the Messiah. Why? Because — maybe we've said this earlier before, I don't know, in other videos — but because the Jews believed that the Messiah was going to be a conquering Messiah. He's going to conquer the Roman Empire. That's not what Jesus was about. From that time on, verse 21, Jesus began to explain that he must go to Jerusalem, suffer many things at the hands of the elders, chief priests, and teachers of the law, that he must be killed and on the third day raised to life. And Peter says, no, that shall never be. Remember the story we read from Mark chapter 8, where the blind person received sight, sort of, saw people, but they were like trees walking around. And then Jesus had to do another miracle where the person could see clearly. It's kind of a parable, if you will. I'm not saying it didn't happen in history. I think it did. I know it happened in history. That's what the Bible portrays it, that healing of that blind man, kind of a twofold healing. But that's kind of a picture of what's going on here with Peter and the disciples. On the one hand, Peter and the disciples' eyes are opened. They see that Jesus is the Messiah. They get it. But then again, they don't get it. They don't quite see clearly, just like that guy in Bethsaida did not see clearly. And so Jesus, by the power of the Holy Spirit in the hearts of the disciples, is going to have to do another miracle to enable them to see clearly, to enable them to see that what being the Messiah really means is a Messiah who would be crucified, died, and one day be raised to life, which the disciples, of course, couldn't figure out what that meant. Who could blame them? So that's the tie-in of the miracle in Bethsaida with what happens here in Caesarea Philippi. Those two things really go together quite well, and it's important to keep both of them in mind, because otherwise, how do you understand that miracle where Jesus tries to heal a guy, give a guy sight, and fails, or at least doesn't succeed fully, and then has to do it over again? It's really a picture of what's going on here at Caesarea Philippi. So a question for us as we close out this little tour of Caesarea Philippi is, where is God sending you? Where has God sent us? You know, we tend to bemoan the fact that the United States has become a post-Christian nation. We look around us, we see all sorts of things happening that are an abomination to God. And we say, woe is me. How did I ever wind up here? How did this happen to us? I think God must have fallen asleep. Maybe God is lost. Well, no, maybe Jesus has put you and me in this place for this time, just as he put the disciples in Caesarea Philippi. And maybe we need to hold on to that verse of scripture. Jesus is going to establish his church based on that statement of faith, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. Maybe we need to claim that promise for us today as we live in our own Caesarea Philippi. Well, thanks for joining me on this tour of Caesarea Philippi. I hope it was a blessing to you. I want to encourage you to write us at eagleson the hill 211@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts about this episode, as well as other episodes you'd like us to see us do, places you'd like to see us tour in Israel, for instance. Remember the promise of God that those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength and soar on wings like eagles. Thanks for listening to the podcast today.